On this episode of This Week in Tech, I am filling in for Leo Laporte. I'm joined by Brian Brushwood, Martin Sargent, and Tim Stevens. It's a great lineup. We're going to talk about iOS 7, all of the new iPhones, changes coming afoot at Google. We're all going to live forever. What's going on with Cyanogen? And much, much more. And RIP BlackBerry, perhaps. All that more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is This Week in Tech, episode 424, recorded Sunday, September 22nd, 2013. Don't call me your pump buddy ever again. This episode of This Week in Tech is sponsored by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get a special offer, go to Stamps.com now. Click on the microphone and enter TWIT. That's Stamps.com and enter T-W-I-T. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIT9. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT9. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files for you automatically and continually for only $59.99 per year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code TWIT and get 2 bonus months with purchase. This is TWIT episode 424. Leo Laporte is on vacation in Italy, in Venice, or wherever he is now. So the TWIT staff all decided to draw straws, and I lost. So I am Sarah Lane, hosting this episode on a beautiful sunny Sunday. Nah, I'm just kidding. We actually have a great studio audience. You can't see them, but they're here thanks to everybody who came up to watch the show live with all of us. I have quite a panel on the show today. First, Martin Sargent.
First, is there anyone else?
Yes. We're going to start with you because you're in studio. You're sitting right next to me. In fact, we carpooled up because we do that sort of thing.
We do. And boy, did I enjoy it.
I did too. Martin Sargent, I don't think that you've been on TWIT since we did this about a year ago.
It's been about a year ago and it hasn't gone unnoticed. Thank you very much for the
Leo has
invitation.
To go on vacation in order for anyone to want me to do this. And then I ask you because that's what we do.
It'll never be Leo and I sitting at the same desk. No, thank you so much. It's so great to be back on TWIT. I love doing this show. Always great to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. And, of course, Brian Brushwood, who is a TWIT regular, NSFW, plus Frame Rate with Tom Merritt on Mondays. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Schwood.
Absolutely. Sorry if I'm all bedraggled. It was a 4 a.m. get up from the airport in Boston and sleep on the plane and land and read the stories and hope you sound like you know what you're talking about kind of day.
I'm wearing bachelorette beads from last night. I thought that it would just, you know, illustrate a little bit of what I've been through in the last 12 hours. One of the ladies almost lost an eye. She's fine. But by the way, I'm not getting married. But, you know, I just thought that they were kind of fun. So, Brian, I'm kind of probably on your level.
This is what's great. Between you and me and Martin, we form like one brain. And then the whole rest of the show will be covered by Tim.
That's right. Tim Stevens, features editor over at CNET, who's going to try to, you know, sort of bring an adult spin on some of these stories. Somebody who really actually does his research and is writing the stories that we then are reading. Hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm great, sir. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here, of course. Martin, before we get into some of the stories, I mean, a lot of people on TWIT know exactly who you are. You and I go way back with Leo, the tech TV days, but what do you do these days?
Not a heck of a lot. Actually, I'm in the advertising business. I currently been working for an agency. I've been doing a lot of work for, you know, Corning, actually. Gorilla Glass is one of my clients now.
All right.
And fantastic. Been doing a lot of really cool ads for them. They're actually going to come out this week. So I want everyone out there to go watch these things. I think you're really going to like them. They're a lot of fun. I think actually one of them has been floated out. If you were to do a YouTube search on Broke Face, broke face, I think that you would find it.
Do they like monitor like Twitter hashtags? Like, should everybody right now just start tweeting like, wow, does this ad ever really make me like
that
about
would make me
Courtney,
so happy. That would be the best thing in the world if everyone
let's
did that.
Let's just start buzz.
Even
man.
If you, listen, even if so you didn't watch the ad, glass. Say it's the greatest thing you've seen since Where's the Beef? That would be fantastic. Yeah, no, check it out. And definitely stay tuned for this week because these other ads are going to come out and I'm really excited about those. So.
Well, excellent. Gorilla Glass, that's, you know, I like it. It's nice not to have a scratched up face. Although, you know, my iPhone 5 is pretty darn scratched up. I guess we should probably start the show talking about who of us has ordered their new 5S, 5C, anything. I'll start. I ordered a 5S on, I stayed up late Thursday night, 12:01 Pacific time Friday morning, which is basically Thursday night. The Apple Store was supposed to open up and allow me to buy the 5S. It took till about 12:04. I refreshed 400 times in those 3 minutes. Then I get through all the whole thing. I said 64 gigs. I want the gold. I'm on Verizon. We're all good. Yep, our data plan is. I'm like, wait a second. I have an unlimited data plan and I don't have that option. What the heck? I go to Twitter and I say, what am I missing? Am I just tired? What's happening? And everyone says, no, you can't do that anymore. That's the end of that. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. I mean, what are you telling me? I'm not going to get a new phone because I can't keep my limited plan. Here's what you do. You go to Verizon.com. You log in. You basically go through the exact same process. And then Verizon will try to trick you into saying, oh, yes, I'd like the 10 gigabyte per month for like $80 or something. Mm-hmm. Some stupid, you know, ridiculous. So I'll pay $175 a month type of a thing where it's like, what? I pay $85 for unlimited data right now. And then you say a bunch of no's and yeses. And finally, it'll say, all right, you want your unlimited plan? Fine. All right, do that. But you have no option to do that if you're a Verizon customer through Apple.com store. So now, by the time I figured that out, the freaking 5S gold 64 gig was like delayed 2 weeks. It happened really quick.
Did you still go for the gold?
Yeah. Yeah, I just had to pay $900 for it.
Did you really want that? Did you even really want this phone at all? Or would any of you guys who bought this thing, if you weren't in this industry and it was incumbent upon you for your jobs, would you have upgraded this phone?
That's a good question. I mean, it's impossible for me to know because I do need this for my job and Leo's paying me that $900 back. But
I bought every single iPhone I bought on release day until this cycle. This will be the very first time that I don't upgrade day one. It may not upgrade at all. And I'm really surprised. I was trying to figure out why. And it hit me that that every single iPhone up until this has had a major new aspect to it that I was really excited about. And for example, you know, going to 4, you had the Retina display, which was huge. 4S, it was fast enough to add Siri. Going to the 5, of course, you got the bigger display and true 16:9. But then this, it's like, it's this vague promises of faster and slightly better photography. Like I can't point to anything that I'm jazzed about. And especially like whatever excitement I had kind of got killed when iOS 7 came out and all of a sudden my phone felt shiny and new. And so I can't believe it, but this is the first time I'm going to sit one out.
Tim, where do you stand on this whole situation?
I was lucky enough to have a loaner device from Apple here, so I actually didn't need to pre-order.
Oh, wow.
I have one here, which is great. I think probably the biggest thing to get excited about here is the fingerprint scanner, which for a lot of people really isn't anything to get that excited about. I use a pin on my phone, and it's very, very, very annoying to have to type that in every time I turn the thing on. It's also very annoying to type in your password whenever you buy anything through iTunes. So not having to do those things is definitely a nice thing. A nice step forward. But yeah, I think the performance improvements that we're looking to see in the new CPU, we won't really see until a little bit down the road when developers kind of get their head around the thing. No bigger storage. Gold is nice, but there aren't really that many people who are going to go out and buy a new phone just to get gold. There's definitely a bit of malaise in the market right now. I do think it is a nice step forward, but I can definitely see why some people are kind of sitting this one out, as it were.
But, you know, you keep hearing that, and then gold is totally hard to come by. So either Apple deliberately kept it in short supply at stores to make it seem like it was selling like hotcakes, which of course is a tactic that's done by lots of companies, Or really, everyone underestimated how much everybody wanted to say, I clearly have a new phone because it's champagne
that's
colors.
That's why people want to get it. And that's the only reason. In fact, did you guys watch, there was this video, this some kind of like short documentary some guy made about the folks standing in line at the New York show. I mean, these are the real fanboys, the guys that are standing in line for 2 weeks to get this gold phone. And
nobody was in line for 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, the first guy on there, he said, professional line standards.
Two weeks.
They sell off their spot.
But, yeah, exactly. Anyway, the first thing these filmmakers asked these guys, they held up a sign and they said, why? And not one of them could give a cogent answer as to why they were standing in line, not just standing in line, but upgrading this phone.
But you know what? I don't blame them for that. There's something about the culture of standing in line for something and being excited with everyone out. I mean, getting the first iPhone and standing in line was one of the most fun, exciting experiences I've had. And you enter this kind of like groupthink mentality and get excited about it. So it's like, I don't want to harp on them for that. But I do think it's interesting. Like every single time they've done an upgrade and done a release, they've released a pre-order information. I think all the way since the 3GS, this is the first time that they haven't announced how many pre-orders that they took for the 5C. Did you guys hear about that?
Go ahead, Tim.
I think it's great that they finally are going to stop doing this because ultimately, you know, they're setting the bar for themselves higher each time, and at some point they weren't going to get over that bar, and ultimately, you know, that's. Investors, you know, seem to be taking any opportunity that they can to knock Apple. And, of course, not beating your own numbers from before is one good way to do it. But, of course, this time they had two new phones that are launching. So in a lot of ways, they were kind of splitting their excitement across these two devices. So you could almost expect those numbers to go down. But, you know, we don't see numbers from Microsoft. We don't see numbers from Amazon. So I think it makes sense for Apple to kind of step away from this. And I would be surprised if we see them stepping back into it again going forward. But I wanted to talk about the line waiter thing. You know, that guy stood in line for a long time to be first at the New York line. He wanted a gold iPhone. He showed up front, and they said they don't have any gold iPhones at the store. He was the number one in line and was told that they didn't have any gold iPhones. Couldn't they tell him that two weeks before he got in line? Just so you know, this is all for naught.
We don't even have what you're waiting here for.
Yeah. It's just sort of a cruel joke.
But you know, that definitely points to the sort of shortages that Apple had for the gold phones. There's been speculation maybe they shipped a lot of them overseas where the expectation is that gold will be a lot more popular than here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Certainly, they didn't have a lot of gold ones to go around. I was there at the New York store that morning, and it was pretty crazy. I think it's the most people they've had waiting in line in the history of iPhone launches. So, you know, that's definitely a good sign for Apple anyway. Yeah.
Do we think that we're going to hear here are the combined sales between the 5C and then the opening weekend for the 5S come tomorrow morning? Because historically, Apple releases something like this in a press release Monday after the iPhone to say, best-selling iPhone yet. Again, like you mentioned, Brian, we never got that for the 5C, but around this time last year when we got the iPad 4th gen and then the iPad mini, Apple did the same thing where they didn't really tell us how well the mini specifically did, but they said, combined, our new iPad lineup has these really, really impressive numbers. This way, even if the 5C was a joke, which I'm sure it sold perfectly fine, but it seems like the 5S is going to have some really strong numbers. Combined, it's going to look great.
Well, first of all, yes, I do. I could totally see them do that, but I'd love to pick Tim's brain on this. To me, I don't understand why they decided to go with this 5C. I mean, I guess I understand why. Why didn't they just keep the original 5 available if that's what they wanted to do, or keep previous generations available? But instead, what they did was they positioned it as a cheaper version of it, and it looks cheap. And they even what did they say? Unapologetically plastic. I understand the desire to do this. Whenever a brand establishes dominance as a high-end brand, for example, we'll say Cadillac. Cadillac for almost 100 years was synonymous with you have to be rich in order to buy a Cadillac. And then at some point, you top out on your market and you start to get really tempted to cash in your brand to cheaper levels. And so they started making cheap Cadillacs to where now it's like Cadillac doesn't mean anything because anyone can afford a Cadillac and all of a sudden they're not special anymore. In this case, it seems like the 5C is lose-lose. It's not significantly better than the 5. It looks different from it, and it looks like a play school toy, and it's allegedly cheap, but it's not even that cheap. Because when you buy it subsidized, it's $99, in which case you end up spending almost $1,000 for it anyway. It's as though they did nothing but cash in their brand value. They reduced the image of the iPhone, and it looks to me like they got nothing out of it except for a short-term payday. I'm kind of pissed about it.
Well, keep in mind that Apple never said this was a cheap phone. In fact, Apple has been very pointedly saying that we never tried to make a cheap phone. This is just a different iPhone. So the whole idea of a cheap iPhone was something that ultimately was created by the media, something that we were all expecting to see, and something that Apple ultimately didn't deliver. Whether that's good or bad, you know, some people are optimistic about the phone. Some people, you're obviously a little bit more pessimistic about it, and I can totally understand that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is definitely just a margins game. The iPhone 5 in its original configuration was not a cheap device to manufacture. It's a very complicated chassis with, you know, custom pieces of glass that had to be slotted in to fit in the back and the chamfered edges and all that stuff. I mean, it looks really nice, but if you're talking about trying to get your margins up, that's a very difficult thing to do. Molding a piece of polycarbonate and drilling some holes in the bottom is a much easier thing to do if you're wanting to, you know, simplify the manufacturing process. In theory, this is a device that they could get cheaper down the road if they want to, and maybe that's the way that they want to go. But it's also a good way for them to differentiate last year's model, which is ultimately what the 5C is, from this year's model even further. You know, I think that adding gold helps out in that regard, but it's even better to basically discontinue the old one and make it look radically different. And that could be a pointer to them going forward and having very different looking models each year. Some people were a bit disappointed by, you know, the S evolution phones looking exactly like the non-S versions. And people, of course, always want to show off that they have the latest and greatest device. And if your phone looks exactly like last year's phone, then that's not a good way to do that. So perhaps this is a pointer to Apple moving forward, having more drastic revisions each year. And they basically kind of push the 5 out of the market to kind of jumpstart that trend going forward. There's a lot of different reasons that they could go for it. I think ultimately you should, you know, check out the 5C. It does feel nicer than you might think it does, despite being plastic. But ultimately, it is a cheaper looking and a cheaper feeling phone than the 5. It just doesn't quite have that level of engineering in it. And so that's why you have to look back at the margins. I think ultimately that's probably why they're doing it.
It looks like a Lumia, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it looks like a cheap Windows phone.
Well, okay, so I guess here's the question.
That's not very nice.
No. Not at all. I think the Lumia phones feel very nice for being polycarbonate, and I think that the 5C feels very nice for being polycarbonate, too. I did kind of chuckle a bit at the unapologetically plastic line from Johnny Ive. That was a bit silly in my eye. But I think it is a nice feeling phone in the hand. I'm curious, though, how it's going to weather. I mean, we saw, of course, the black iPhone 5 get scratched up real easily. Polycarbonate, of course, has a well-earned reputation for being easy to scratch. This is a clear-coated device, so maybe that'll add some durability. But I'm curious what this is going to look like after a couple of months of being thrown in your pocket with your keys. Is it going to kind of get a nice patina to it, or is it just going to look scratched up and cheap and ugly?
Yeah, well, I mean, this iPhone 5 I've had for, you know, less than a year, and I've never had a case on it, and it is extremely scratched up. And I don't even, you know, it's not like I'm doing anything on purpose. It's just in my purse with my keys and maybe some crumbs.
It's never in your purse. It's constantly, yeah, sitting at
when
dinner.
When I am.
Sarah Lane's across the dinner table.
Come on.
The whole time.
It's 2013. What am I supposed to look you in your eyes? That's
weird.
Does she
make that sound when she's texting too?
Yes, she does. That's her ringtone.
So Tim has it. To the point I was asking earlier, is there a single thing that you would show off? Like if we were at a bar and I was like, all right, prove to me, make me want the 5S.
Yeah, I guess besides the fingerprint sensor, which is just kind of cool because it's new, what else is so great about it?
But also they did kind of a clever trick with iOS 7 where they just made it part of the setup. They're like, and now you have to pick a pin unless you think to do the little dismiss thing. And so now I've never used a pin for like 4.5 years. And then now they kind of tricked me into doing it. And so now it's like they created this inconvenience. And yes, there's added security. But now I could see wanting a fingerprint scanner.
Yeah, I mean, the police departments are trying to get everyone to do just that, just what you had to do, Brian, right? Because, you know, it does increase security, and it's a huge problem right now here in San Francisco. It's a massive problem, people getting their phones stolen all the time because they're like Sarah Lane, and they're walking down the street, and they can't put the phone in the purse.
I can outrun them.
They sneak up from behind. They push you. They clock you in the back of the head.
It's a legitimate problem.
And you drop the phone, and you fall on the sidewalk. They grab the phone and run away. I mean, it happens daily. Absolutely. That's exactly how it happens. I used to do it.
but Tim, what do you think are the standouts?
Yeah, Brian's absolutely right. Beyond fingerprint scanning, there's nothing really that makes you think, oh my God, I have to have this phone. It's a combination of a lot of smaller features that may or may not be appealing to you. I mean, having dual LED flashes that can adjust color temperature is pretty interesting, but ultimately, how often do you actually use flash for smartphone camera photography? If anything, we've all been trained to never take a picture with a flash with your phone because ultimately it's just going to be a terrible picture. Maybe we can relearn that. Better photography is nice, but again, it's not really night and day better than the iPhone 5 in my experience yet. And again, it's really, I think, the CPU that has the most potential for greater delivery down the road. But of course, all the apps that exist now have been written for the older CPU. While it's easy to port them up to the new 64-bit chip, ultimately there aren't going to be any gains until we see new development going forward to make use of all the new registers and the increased pipeline and all that other good stuff that it brings along with it. So I think that we'll see some great games going forward and a lot of cool stuff. But again, it's not something that's out there right now unless you're really, really hot to play the new Infinity Blade game and all its glory, then again, it's not really a huge strong selling point right now. But the fingerprint scanner is legitimately good. I mean, I use a Note 2, and I have a pin on there, and you know, it feels archaic now for me to have to type my pin in all the time on that thing versus just scanning my finger.
Can you use your fingerprint to buy apps in the App Store, or is it just to unlock your phone? See, that to me is
right now.
That's worth $900 right there.
It is pretty huge. The expectation for me anyway is that that's going to be extended across other services and other platforms as well. I mean, I hope that Apple opens that up so that other applications can kind of tie into that. And I think they probably will. And I also hope that, you know, we start to see these on MacBooks in the not too distant future, because presumably, you know, we saw glass trackpads not too long after the iPhone came out. Presumably they could take this tech and pop it onto a MacBook without too much trouble. And you can sign into your laptop with your fingerprint too. That to me is also quite exciting. And so we can also see some cross-pollination in that regard.
All right. Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about what you brought up, Martin, about safety and the story about New York City. But before we do that, we should take a moment to thank Stamps.com for sponsoring this episode of This Week in Tech. If you're not familiar with Stamps.com, you probably have a guess as to what the business model is. You buy and you print official U.S. postage using your own computer, your own printer. It's very convenient. Who wants to go buy stamps anymore? Stamps.com will send you a digital scale and will automatically calculate exact postage for any letter. You know, sometimes letters, you put a bunch of stuff in there and all of a sudden you need two stamps and then it gets returned and who needs it? Any package, any class of mail. You never have to waste time going to the post office, because sometimes there's something about the post office where it's like people just do not want to be in a rush there. And the way that Murphy's Law works is if you're in a rush, you will be 10 people back at the post office. And you don't want to waste money with some expensive postage meter type of a thing. You just want to use Stamps.com and keep it simple for yourself. For example, if you're a small business, you gotta send stamps out. You want a nice professional look. You don't have to handwrite addresses onto letters and packages. With Stamps.com, you can print your own barcoded postage, return and delivery addresses, all professionally done. You don't have to get it sent out and then buy all the stuff in bulk. You can do it directly onto the envelope. Makes everything you do and send out using the Postal Service look as professional as possible. Now, there's a special offer for anybody who's interested and who likes and watches and listens to TWIT. If you use the promo code TWIT, you get a no-risk trial, plus you get a 110 bonus offer, which includes a digital scale and up to $55 of free postage. Think about it. Everything you can do at the post office, plus a lot of things you can't do at the post office. Because think about it, post offices have really annoying times. You know, you want to go there at 7, well, they say no. Stamps.com is never going to close, so you can buy postage, print it 24/7. You can import addresses from all of your address books across many of your computers. You can use cost codes to track postage spending by specific customers. Again, if you're that small business, that really comes in handy. Automatic address verification. Stamps.com will even offer postage discounts that the post office never offers. You can get discounted package insurance in just one click. And then you don't have to handwrite stuff. Who wants to handwrite an envelope anymore? Go to Stamps.com right now before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in TWIT. Again, you get that $55 free postage, which includes a digital scale. It's a 110 bonus offer. That's Stamps.com, and enter TWIT to take advantage of our special today. And thanks to Stamps.com for sponsoring this episode of TWIT. Mm.
So to summarize, basically standing in line at the post office is about as ridiculous as standing in line at the Apple store. Don't do it.
If only I could print out my own iPhone at home, I'd really be in business.
That's right.
With 3D printing, how far away are we really?
Through the post office.
You get what?
You get it mailed to you, so you don't have to wait in line.
Exactly. Yeah. That's true. Hey, so you mentioned that it's an issue getting gadgets stolen in general, iPhones have a particularly bad reputation. Huge. Because thieves just, they don't want to take your identity. They want nothing to do with your iPhone. They just want the hardware, and then they wipe it, and then they sell it on the black market. What's interesting is not only with the fingerprint sensor, hopefully, unless somebody steals your hand. Well, that doesn't really work unless it's attached to you. But in general, it's harder to get in. But also, there's a new feature so that if your phone gets stolen and you've got Find My iPhone turned on, if I've got Find My iPhone turned on and yeah, I leave it here and I look it up from my MacBook or an iPad later, I see that it's here. Somebody takes it, I should be able to track that. Well, in the past, a thief turns that off and then you're screwed. But now the thief will need to enter a passcode or some other way to get in. And if they don't have that information, they still steal your phone, but it's much easier to track them down. Now, of course, the New York Police Department has sort of started this, I don't know, I guess a citywide, borough-wide PSA saying this is why you should update to iOS 7 because this is a great feature that's part of iOS 7. Still means someone's going to have to go after a thief and it shouldn't be you. But it does make sense for law enforcement to at least have some more control over where all these phones are going.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense for law enforcement. It actually makes sense for people who actually use these things to do this.
Exactly.
If this happens to them, well, hopefully this will be enough of a deterrent now that, you know, it'll take a little bit of time, but people will stop clocking people in the back of the head so they drop their phone and they can snatch it because it'll be useless to them, presumably.
Tim, have you ever had an issue with anybody taking your phone or having to look it up on Find My iPhone, or is this just sort of seem like good safety precaution in general?
I'm happy to say no one has ever hit me over the back of the head and stolen my phone. I have lost my phone, though, and so being able to track it down and that sort of thing, I think is definitely a great feature and something that everybody should be doing. And ultimately, it's something that not everybody knows they can do. So it is part of the iOS 7 setup now to have these extra security precautions enabled. And I think it's really nice of the police, honestly, to be doing these sorts of things. And like I said, yeah, I think hopefully down the road this will sort of change the perception of stealing someone's phone because now it's basically like stealing a tracking device that will help send the police right to your house potentially. And yeah, who knows? Maybe people will stop hitting people over the back of the head.
Well, and keep in mind also that, you know, iPhones have, first of all, the same thing that we like about them as a consumer device is a liability. It has a very characteristic look, and thieves know that they'll have a high resale value immediately. But if, as a result, like people are saying, like, government wants to get in your passwords. That's why they want you to upgrade to iOS 7 or whatever. No, these people are just as lazy as you are, and they would like it make it easier to catch the bad guys. But think about it this way: it's almost as though they're reminding you to get your shots, to get your immunizations, because if enough people upgrade iOS 7 and take advantage of the security features, all of a sudden the iPhone ceases to be such a tasty treat for the criminals.
Exactly.
And even if you don't upgrade, you might benefit from kind of a herd immunity where all of a sudden the iPhone is just too much trouble, theoretically. I'm sure that's where they're headed, and obviously we're not there now. But I actually applaud them going for it. In fact, my co-host on NSFW, Justin Robert Young, was robbed at gunpoint. He was actually carrying two $300 Bluetooth speakers in his hands on the phone. So he had $600 in speakers and a phone up to his ear. Guy pulls a gun on him and he's like, oh, so obviously you want these speakers. And the guy said, no, man, just the phone. And he's like, are you sure? They're really nice speakers. He's like, no, I just want the phone. And then ran off with them. And so again, it's like the iPhone has a reputation of being fast and easy to turn around. And anything they could do to stop that, I think, would be a benefit to all consumers.
Yeah, you know, Brian, that's an interesting analogy you make to government trying to get you to get immunizations than the government trying to get you to upgrade this phone, because people are paranoid about both things. I mean, sort of for different reasons, but, you know, yes, guy like Alex Jones, he's probably going to be against a lot of both of these things because there is this conspiracy theory out there. A lot of people think this, that fingerprint scanner, this is a way for the government to get your fingerprints. You no longer have to be arrested for them to harvest your fingerprints.
Yeah.
Does anyone feel this way?
I mean, the chat is alive.
Yes, of course.
The chat is bubbling up with people saying, like, how long till we hear about someone cutting off a finger to use it to deactivate a phone or whatever? It's like, I don't think that people are going to do that. If they're stealing a phone for, you know, the $200 they can get for it, my guess is there's a big difference between, like, a petty theft and a attempted manslaughter or whatever.
Apparently, too, this has been thought about, and for reasons that now are escaping me, that blood has to be flowing to the fingerprint or it's not going to work. Tim, well, you've probably not severed any limbs to try this out for yourself, but one has
true,
to assume.
Actually. A club has managed to make a 3D print of a finger from captured fingerprint, basically, and unlock a phone that way, which is a pretty typical way of getting past fingerprint sensors. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you know, if you think of the level of effort to take someone's fingerprint and to capture it and then to have the means to actually do a 3D printing, you know, already that's raised the barrier of entry of reselling this thing way beyond the point of like Brian's point, you know, getting your $200 back. It's just not worth it at that point. So even if that is theoretically possible, in no way does that compromise or reduce the value of the security.
Boy, the more I hear about 3D printing, the more it just terrifies me.
It fascinates.
I mean, it's a great, great thing.
It baffles my mind.
Yeah, printing guns, printing fingers. I don't know. Are we headed?
That seems like a hoax. How do they do that?
Well, it's not a hoax.
I know it's not a hoax. But it's hard to believe.
It's hard to wrap your head around.
I don't want it to exist.
Some of the possibilities, I know.
The Chaos Computer Club, ccc.de, they've been talking about it in chat currently. And it's an old technique that, I mean, they used to use it in the old line scanning fingerprint sensors. They had to run your finger over, which I actually have in my Lenovo laptop. Oh. It worked in those, and it still works here for the new devices, too.
Well, on a lighter note, are we all following Tim Cook on Twitter? Apple CEO Tim Cook joined Twitter a couple days ago. He currently stands at 214,925 followers. That's up from, 93 3 days ago, the last time I checked. He has tweeted exactly once. His tweet was, visited retail stores in Palo Alto today. Seeing so many happy customers reminds us of why we do what we do. Then 20
at
hours
last.
Ago, he retweeted Conan O'Brien, who said, iOS 7, more like iOS heaven. # Finally. Apple, please send me an iPad.
Oh, the long national nightmare is truly over. Finally, we know what Tim Cook is going
Seriously.
To do.
Yeah, really.
I'm not going to follow Tim Cook unless Tim Cook follows me.
Well, he's not following me either, if it makes you feel any better. But it's interesting to look at the 27 accounts he is following. You've got the App Store, iTunes Music, Nike sits on the board there, iBooks. But then you've got Conan O'Brien, Bill Clinton, the Pope, Duke Basketball, Anderson Cooper, Jimmy Fallon. I mean, the guy, he likes to laugh. This guy loves his late night.
That would be an interesting dinner party, the people he's following.
Now, at one point, Tim Cook was following the rock band Kings of Leon. Oh, no, he still is. Kings of Leon is clearly something that Tim Cook likes to listen to, which is just fine. I don't know if I ever thought of Tim Cook as a Kings of Leon guy. Maybe more of a...
You hear that, America? Stand down. Put down your pitchforks. He still likes Kings of Leon.
Yeah, Kings of Leon, still cool. Tim Cook likes
them.
Check
to see if Federighi's following Journey on Twitter. I'll let you know.
Tim Cook, of course, Southern
now,
gentleman, went to Duke.
Is this a surprise at all? Does he have beef with Twitter? Is that why we should be surprised that he finally jumped on?
I don't think it's a surprise so much as it's just sort of weird in this day and age when a very high-profile executive at a company like Apple takes so long to tweet something. He's had an account, apparently, for a couple of months, but this was his first tweet, and it was retweeted by Federighi, I think, or maybe it was Phil Schiller. It was just sort of like, okay, obviously that's really him. It was sort of proved as a little bit of verification, but I think that's weird, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's weird, but whatever. Who cares?
I
don't cares? Know.
That's about where I stand, too.
Yeah? Well, all right. Should we talk about iOS 7, or are we all done?
I love it.
Are we done with
it? I actually really like it. I upgraded the thing, and
We were talking about that on the ride up.
Yeah.
It was I don't really have anything bad to say about it.
I don't have any problem with it. I don't find it in any way offensive. I mean, it's a change. I've been staring at the same desktop on my phone for so many years now.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to have this sort of fresh new look on there. And so far, I haven't found anything that I really dislike except this. This morning, I was woken up and I was like, what? what is, I was terrified. What is this noise in my ear? Well, apparently when you upgrade, be warned about this. Your ring changes, your alarm changes. So
yeah, they've got a whole new set of ringtones.
It was extremely disconcerting. It was this whole new chorus in my ear that it just, I had no idea what was going
on. Do you sleep with your phone up to your ear?
No, but it's on the bedstand. It's not that far away.
Yeah, yeah. You know who doesn't like iOS 7?
Dvorak.
Well, probably. But you know who's in good company with Dvorak? It's Miley Cyrus. She does not like iOS 7. She tweeted about it as well. And we
Cyrus,
all know that
Dvorak,
she is quite a trendsetter.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah,
I know.
Actually,
just before we started this episode, we have video of Miley Cyrus after she saw iOS 7.
In fact,
7.
We do. Yeah, Chad, do you have that?
Can you roll that video?
Oh, poor,
no.
Poor Miley.
No, it is not.
What?
Well, you're just going to have to get used to it.
No, I don't want it.
I prefer that, actually, to that video of her swinging on a wrecking ball,
she's
nude.
She's not as bad as I thought.
So much better.
I know. She speaks for a nation. You know,
there was a really funny piece on BuzzFeed about people who were startled by this upgrade. And all of a sudden, they looked at their phone and they thought, oh, my God, my phone is broken. What's going on here? Somebody's hacked into my phone. There was a great deal of paranoia about this upgrade because they, unlike us who were paying attention, we know very well that this upgrade is coming out. Most people, the average American, has no idea that there's going to be a phone upgrade, right?
I would say that that's true.
I think that's true. Yeah. And then when it happens,
because why would
they
care?
This is a really big change. And, you know, why wouldn't you think that there was something maybe broken? I think you would probably understand soon and wouldn't have to go tweeting about it, but...
And, of course, the ability for Apple to actually push these updates is a fairly new thing. So people, you know, this is the first time a lot of people have seen such a radical change go through. It might have been nice for Apple to do a push notification the day before, like, hey, guys, you know, your phone's going to look a little bit different tomorrow, and you're not getting hacked, honestly. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you would expect, you know, from a financial institution or that kind of thing, that something radical is changing. That might not have been a bad idea. I did want to ask if anybody's noticed any battery life issues. I've heard a lot of complaints. I haven't seen anything myself, but I certainly heard a lot of people talk anecdotally about it anyway.
I've heard exactly that. I've heard stories of someone being at 70% and 2 minutes later their battery's dead. Now, I don't know, this is a little early to say this, but I think my battery life is better.
Oh, I hope that's true.
Wow. I mean,
I
got out of my car fully charged, and well, I really haven't been using my phone, but I mean, it hasn't moved at all. It seems to be holding a charge longer in the day than before. Maybe I'm just Snapchatting less since iOS 7 came about.
I have not noticed any difference in battery life. The only thing I've noticed is, I guess, does it, when you have groups of icons, here, I'm going to put mine on camera here. When you have groups of icons, like, how does it determine the color for the background? Does it take that from the background? Because
what do you mean?
Makes it really hard. Well, it's just everything's gray on mine now because the grouped...
apps, the folders.
The backgrounds.
Yeah,
the folders. Sorry. That's, some of us don't host i5 for the iPhone.
Yeah, well, they're called folders, Brian.
Okay, thanks. but like, there's no way to change that? That's what bums me out, is I used to really like my background, and now I don't.
You know, Tom Merritt on TNT said the same thing. We were all sort of saying, okay, iOS 7 first thoughts, and he goes, I really hate these gray folders. I think it has a lot to do with what your background is behind that gray folder, because my background is sort of a... I don't know if you can see it. You can kind of see it. It's sort of a gray, darkish themed photo of my cat, Sam. And I actually think it works pretty well with the gray folders. I mean, they stand out, but they're not crazy. But Akhtar and I were comparing folders on our iPads. And he had kind of this nice background that he had. It was sort of a snowy mountainscape type thing. And the folders were more annoying, I thought, because there was more of a contrast. But yeah, I guess it would be nice to be able to customize the color of your folders, but Apple doesn't like you to have too much control.
Yeah, people in the chat are agreeing that now my background looks terrible. Thanks, Obama. I mean, Apple.
Obama, yeah.
That's Obama for you.
But I was expecting, because I saw so many photos and mock-ups of what iOS 7 looked like, and you know, I didn't have a review unit until I chose not to download the beta because I thought, it'll be buggy and who needs it? I'll wait till it's actually released to the public. I thought that the color scheme was just going to throw me off, and I was going to think the whole thing was ugly. And It doesn't bother me a tick.
Quite pleasing. I find it
pleasing as well, but I know not everybody feels that way. Tim, do you find that you get used to it quickly, or do you still think it's sort of neon and awful?
The more I use it, the more I get used to it. But it is rather bright, and it is rather vibrant. And especially if you have kind of a muted or a simple background that doesn't match the colors of the foreground, obviously, at that point, things are going to be even more garish. I'm still not a fan of the icons, but ultimately, you know, overall, it's still a huge step forward. I think it does look a lot more mature and a lot more simple and a lot more sophisticated than the last version of iOS, for sure. But I do wish you had some color customization options to be able to choose some templates or choose some colors for menus and colors for backgrounds and folders and that kind of thing. I think that would appease a lot of folks. And ultimately, it's the kind of thing that you can do in OS X, and obviously in Windows you can do it too. So why not in iOS?
In terms of usability, you think it's an improvement, not just looks. You're right, the icons are a little garish. But, you know, you tap, you swipe, you swoosh, something fun's bound to happen.
Yeah, Leo.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely much more fun to use.
Seriously, I'm going to open up a menu or something. Whoa!
Leo has been a very vocal opposition to the swiping and the swooshing. He says it makes him feel like he's on a boat and he's out on the open seas and he's sick.
He's drunk.
Get that man some Dramamine.
I don't know. I mean,
I'll tell you what, I would upgrade to OS 7 just for the whatever this thing is. What's i5? What's it called?
Great question.
Control center, no.
Control center.
There we go. The control center and the fact that they finally, you know, they built in a flashlight on there, super valuable, and the brightness you can fix.
It is great.
Super easy. I use all of that has been astonishingly intuitive, and the fact that you're only one swipe away from going into airplane mode or whatever. I love the hell out of it. I think it's... that part's really good. Everything else is just difficult to just find. Everything's just a little bit different. There's a couple of times, especially on maps, where you have to go through a couple of extra clicks or swipes and nothing's where you left it. But, I mean, that's just me being an old man. So, again, who cares?
Brian, how'd you do that?
Yeah, see, okay. this is actually the point I'm about to make is that you have to like, aggressively swipe up. If you just swipe up, nothing will happen. You have to be, like... aggressively swipe up to get that control center.
I feel like I'm starting a lawnmower.
Yeah.
You just gotta, I think it seems like you gotta make sure to start it from below where the screen is. It's gotta touch the very edge of the screen.
Yeah, look at that. You didn't even know what you had. You were just sitting there, a gold mine.
What's all this?
Amazing, right? See, more fun.
You can toggle your Bluetooth all day long now.
Ooh, there's a moon and a plane.
Yeah, and it took me, even though Apple told me quickly where it was when I was setting up iOS 7, it still took me a better part of an hour to figure out where my spotlight went. Because I was like, swiping to the right doesn't go anywhere now. How do I find anything? I'm lost. Oh, you swipe down. That was not intuitive. Wow. Took me forever. I had to look it up.
I thought I would like the parallax backgrounds, but I really don't notice or care about them. I notice a lot more that it's hard to see. I'm surprised at how disappointed I am.
Are you disappointed or are you just never going to think about it again?
What? No, I wanted to be blown away by it, but instead the effect was so small. And I don't know if that's a saving processor thing or what, but it's subtler than I had hoped it would be. And as a result, I don't really dig it.
I don't really. I feel like it's just not at all something that I am impressed by. What's weird too is that, okay, well, you've got people who say a little too much swooshing and animation going on here in iOS 7. So you go into your settings area. If you go into settings, I think it's general, and then down at accessibility, you've got a new option to, is that where it is? No, not accessibility. I don't know. It's in there somewhere. You have some sort of an option to turn off some of the motion in iOS 7. I thought, oh, that's cool. All right, let's do that. And it doesn't really change anything. The only thing it does is turn off the parallax effects, which I think is not even the part that bothers people the most.
What am I doing wrong here?
What do you mean?
All right. This is the portion of the show where we all just play with our phones. It's Christmas.
I'm trying to get back to Brian's secret place. There you go.
There you go. You found it.
Wait, but you didn't show me how.
Tim, is there any other big feature that we haven't touched on for iOS 7? Something that maybe you know to be excited about, but I'm too dumb?
Nope. I think we've pretty much covered everything at this point.
No more Easter eggs. By the way, it is an accessibility. It's accessibility and then reduced motion, which is now off. If I say, yeah, let's turn that on, it'll say reduce the motion of the user interface, including the parallax effect of icons and alerts. Okay, that sounds good. But all I can figure out that it does is specifically only turn off the parallax effects. So you're still getting all the swishing. Reduced motion is on. Look, I'm still swishing around. It's all the same. So I don't know.
I feel like we've appled this whole thing.
Yeah.
I concur.
We're down to the core, people.
No more. No more from Apple. This is an Apple-free zone after this. It's probably a good time to take a little break and thank Shutterstock.com for sponsoring this episode of This Week in Tech. Ozzy the dog loves Shutterstock. You know why? Because you can look at, you can type in, let's say, pictures of, you could type in Papillon, which is the breed of dog that he is. Very specific. Or just dog. As Chad was all set up to do before I threw him off. Papillon is spelled with two L's. It's a French word, Chad, by the way. But the neat thing about...
That's just mean. French? You know Chad's dyslexic. You teasing him? What is this?
Yeah, I'm not even going to try that.
Didn't actually know that. All of a sudden, this has turned into some dark comedy. At Shutterstock.com, you can find the perfect image or video for your next creative project. You see, we're looking at all these great, great images of dogs. Well, you can search something as simple as dogs, or let's say you're putting together a new website or some sort of advertisement or putting together a video, whatever, any type of creative project. And maybe you need not just a picture of a dog, but a picture of a dog that also, you know, has some sort of an incorporation of yellow into that because you're going to make it your banner for your new review site, or I don't know what that kind of site would be, but you get the idea. Any type of project, you can choose from over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. What's cool about it is that not only is there a huge variety of the kind of images and videos that you'll find on Shutterstock, but the contributors are professional photographers. This is not like some guy who's just mocking up some stuff and hoping to get a few bucks from Shutterstock. This is really, really high quality stuff. And 10,000 images are added every day. Every day. I mean, think about how many new images you would have just per week if you had an account. There's always something new every time you go. Flexible pricing at Shutterstock. So depending on what you're looking for, you can do individual image packs or a monthly subscription if that's the kind of deal that you're looking for. You can download 25 images per day with a standard subscription. So just starting off, I mean, that's a lot of content to work with. And you can download any image in any size, and you're just paying one price. So if there's something that you like, you feel like, wow, I can use this in a few different places, you don't have to pay for it over and over again. For anybody who may be familiar with how Facebook ads can look pretty unprofessional, Shutterstock recently partnered with Facebook. They're now providing advertising customers free access to Shutterstock images through Facebook's ad creation tool. The goal is, let's make some of this stuff look more professional. If you're the kind of person who's thinking about your own Facebook ads or maybe using them and you think that your traction could be greatly improved, and this is going to be what Shutterstock is helping you with. Great resource for local businesses that want professional looking ads. Now, if you're interested in Shutterstock.com, you don't need a credit card to try it out. You can try Shutterstock right now, sign up for a free account, start using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could look like. Start saving some images to a light box to review later. When you decide to purchase, use the offer code TWIT9. So that's TWIT and the number 9. And new accounts will receive 25% off any package. It's a great deal. Shutterstock.com, and for 25% off new accounts, use the offer code TWIT9. And thanks to Shutterstock for their continued support of This Week in Tech. You know, Chad, this is probably a good time to look over the last week of TWIT the network, not TWIT the show, because, well, we just like to confuse people that way. It's a show and a network. What else has been going on in the TWIT universe?
This Week in Tech. Previously on TWIT. This Week in Enterprise Tech.
The FBI secretly took control of Freedom Hosting in July 12th, and they used those servers to distribute malware onto computers that were connecting to Freedom Hosting servers.
This Week in Google.
I got my Nexus 7 LTE, and I was
and
so
all
happy
your dreams came true, right, Jeff?
No!
Here we go.
I get a tweet from Verizon saying it's not part of our lineup and can't be activated. So today I wrote and sent a formal complaint to the Federal Communications Commission saying, go after them, bastards.
Gizwiz.
This is a tool that you use to start campfires. I mean, nothing could possibly go wrong with this, right?
No.
I mean, oh gosh. Okay.
Twit. This place used to be a drugstore.
Is that our new tagline at Twit?
I've never heard that before. Do we say that every week?
No. That's Jim Cutler. He comes up with those on the fly.
Oh, my God. That's, you know, this used to be a drugstore. We're sitting in an old drugstore right now. A former drugstore.
It was Tully's Drugs. Tully's Drugstore.
Tully's? Not Tuttle's?
What happened to Tully?
I don't,
died.
Know. He's gone.
Tully is.
He's actually in the basement.
Did I see?
Tully heaven.
It looked like you were, when you were demonstrating that fire starting thing, I thought I saw an envelope with my logo on it. What was
yes.
that about?
So what I was doing was I was burning things that would I would be.
Oh, I see.
You know, you'd normally catch on fire. And so one of them was an old photo of me that I wanted to burn, like old memories. And the other one was Brian Brushwood. You're a fire eater. So I thought that's why you were there.
Set fire to your stuff.
I wasn't setting fire to you. I was setting your fire eater. It was kind of a stretch is all I had on my desk.
As Mooncat in the chat says, keep digging, Chad. You're doing great.
Yeah.
Oh, great network we have. I loved that. If you haven't seen the Jeff Jarvis rant on last week's This Week in Google. Well, I don't think he was laughing. He was pretty fired up. But it's a good one. It's a good one. I love it when Jeff gets fired up. You?
Love it.
Yeah. It's one of your favorite things.
Fire. You should do that with him. He's on fire, too.
Second only to Steve Gibson when he goes on a security rant.
Oh, don't get me started on Gibson and his security.
Love him. Love that guy.
Shields up.
Hey, should we talk about Google flattening its logo? Everybody wants to go flat. Got rid of some drop shadows in the Google logo. Martin, what do you think? Is it the wave of the future?
I didn't notice anything. No, seriously, I didn't. And, you know, supposedly there were some changes on there. When I looked at the Google homepage, I did not see any changes, so I don't know what I'm missing here.
Well, okay, I mean, we can look at the logo. It's not going to look drastically different, but this is the next generation of Google.
When I tried it earlier, like right now, I still get kind of drop shadowy on there.
Yeah.
When I go to Google.com. Right. I don't know if that's personalized for me or something.
It's
here,
I'm
going to
open an incognito window.
What are they, beta? Is it putting these in?
Well, you know, I think it's some sort of a rollout because I actually don't have it either. And I still have the black bar, which is another thing that's going away for anybody who spends a lot of time in Gmail. Maybe you use Google Drive, you're on Google Plus. You've got your top black bar that has nice, easy links to Sarah Lane, my Google profile, Maps, YouTube, Gmail, calendar, etc. Using those all the time. I mean, the navigation is very, very important, but never really liked the black bar. Mm. Not a huge fan of the black bar. And apparently, eventually, some people already have it. I know Tom.
You know what's weird is downstairs. I tried it and it worked. But now upstairs, I wonder if it's the kind of thing they're just rolling it out to some servers and it's just taking time for
apparently
the cache or whatever.
Yeah, but
when I tried it before, it looked. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. When we were live on TNT, I guess it was Friday, in the middle of the show, Jason Howell was like, oh, look, it just updated for me. And, you know, we're sitting right next to each other, and I can't get it to work on any of my Google accounts, and I have a few of them. But it is an improvement. I mean, goodbye, black bar. Now you've got a nice little, looks like a little, I don't know, a little grid. Click on it, and then you've got some other options. I don't know if you can, pull up what we're all going to enjoy. So four out of four of us don't have this working.
Well, and people in the chat are telling me to clear my cache, but I opened an incognito browser, so I would think it shouldn't matter. I'll try it in Internet Explorer and see if that's any different.
Well, maybe before the show is over. Yeah, so all right. So this is what it's going to look like when we all get upgraded. So no more black bar. Now you've got a nice little, it's a little
they call it an app tray.
An app tray. Yeah. You click on it and then you get all your good stuff. The branding looks better. It looks cleaner overall. I mean, I have to say, there are certain Google services I use more than others, but
sure,
I always have several Google, not just that I'm using the Chrome browser, but I mean, I've got several Gmail accounts. Everything that I do for Twit goes through Google. So, I mean, this is an experience that I live in constantly all day, every day. So the improvements like this are welcome from me.
What is up with flat being so awesome now? Like, is this have something to do? Like, we hated 3D TVs, so now everyone's just like, you know, don't even look 3D. Everyone be flat.
It's more of a mobile thing.
I don't find it all that attractive.
Smaller displays, that they kind of get rid of a lot of that detail, and it just sort of looks messy. So when you have something with bevels on it or shadows, it just makes the image look muddier when you make it smaller. So as we have smaller displays on phones, our logos are getting cleaner. But of course, while that's happening, our displays are getting higher resolution, which enables us to have bevels and shadows and things like that too. So, you know, probably in 2 or 3 years, suddenly we'll have a lot of new logos with a lot of bevels and shadows and probably some blingy effects too, just to keep it exciting. It'll probably be a cyclical thing.
Yeah, this is exciting.
It's exciting stuff. Well, you know what is exciting is the concept that Google may help us just live a lot longer. Have you heard about this?
This is very exciting, potentially.
Emphasis on potentially, because we don't know a whole lot about a new company called Calico, which is not just Google investing in some company. This is actually Google announcing a new company called Calico. It's going to focus on health and well-being, and focus particularly on aging and associated diseases with aging. Arthur D. Levinson, chairman and former CEO of Genentech, chairman of Apple, will be a chief executive officer. He's also a founding investor in Calico. And Larry Page, Google CEO, had a statement about it. And, I mean, these Google guys, you take them seriously because they really do like to put a lot of effort into stuff that goes against the idea of, you know, search and advertising through money. He says, illness and aging affect all of our families. With some longer-term moonshot thinking around healthcare and biotechnology, I believe we can improve millions of lives. Then he talks up Art. He says, it's impossible to imagine anyone better than Art, one of the leading scientists, entrepreneurs, and CEOs of our generation, to take this new venture forward.
What I thought was really interesting.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine.
But he specifically mentions in there that, look, we're not trying to cure cancer here. Not because cancer doesn't need to be cured, but because if you do cure cancer, you live maybe 3 more years. We're going for solutions that'll get you 20, 40, 100 more years. And in fact, I think they even said that, like, for folks who are younger than 20 years old, they want to see them living 100 extra years through these initiatives.
Yeah, I mean,
which is super ambitious.
It's crazy. With that cancer thing, you know, he said, we think of solving cancer as this huge thing. ... I'm cutting to the end here. It's not as big as of an advance as you might think. And the thinking of this is, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, of course, if you cure cancer, that's a huge thing. A lot of people suffer from cancer. But his point is, when people get cancer, they usually, that takes 3 years off their life, whatever the average is. Hopefully a lot, you know, they live a lot longer than that. But he's talking about making people live for decades longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot to do because, you know, when people die of old age, you know, maybe they die of a heart failure, but then they open them up and there's like 12 other systems that are just about to go. So, I mean, it's ambitious, but they're talking about everything from nanobots that repair DNA to planarian flatworms is the comparison, because planarian worms are able to repair their own cells. So let's all be like worms.
So let's cut to the chase here. Is this going to help us?
Yeah.
You know, guys, like, we're probably pretty much all around the same age, within plus or minus 10 years. I don't know. Is it going to help us, or do you have to?
Doing great, Martin. Just keep digging. Everything's awesome. Yeah.
How many of you did I disaffect? But no, is it going to help us, or is it our kids who this is going to help?
Well, I don't know. I think I'm lucky to get to 90 as it is. It's like, do I really want to be 90 for another 20 years?
Do I want to be
100?
I'm going to
look awful. I'm going to be mad about everything.
I'm already a cranky old man.
Yeah. I mean, as far as helping us, I mean, that's Kurzweil's whole thing, right? Where he talks about in his book, The Singularity's Near, that it doesn't matter how old you are now, as long as the technology outpaces your aging, that you'll be okay. So all you got to do is stay alive long enough to the point where the technology makes it possible to pretty much live forever, which I think is a bit rosy, but I'm excited he's trying, and I'm excited that that more advances are coming as a result.
Yeah, and I guess the really big deal is there's going to be a lot more money behind this. It is hard to get a lot of money behind, you know, awful diseases or a lot of healthcare things. I mean, there's just not that much money. But this is, you know, we're talking about some huge people here. We're talking about some billion, multi-billion dollar companies. Hopefully, a huge amount of money will now be put into healthcare, and a company like Google that just, you know, just so innovative, so revolutionary of so many different things, going to revolutionize the way we live.
Tim, do you think that, I mean, is Google kind of the only company that could make this sort of a claim, and everybody, you know, we're all sitting here going, well, this is amazing. We're all going to live a lot longer without really any information of how that's
going
to happen.
Thank you, Google.
Well, by having that tied to Genentech, I mean, that definitely means, you know, that gives them a lot of good tidings or a lot of potential. Genentech kind of pioneered the idea of biotechnology, and they were one of the first to replicate human DNA in viruses, basically, which is, you know, a very common thing now. It's, you know, the fundamental biotechnology came from Genentech. So if we get the same kind of results from this new company, Calico, that Genentech basically brought to that industry, then, yeah, it could absolutely be huge repercussions. But ultimately, you know, Genentech did a lot of that stuff back in the 70s, and it's just sort of coming to fruition now. So if we see the same pace of innovation, we're probably decades away from seeing anything truly concrete come out of this. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, this is a very kind of nebulous issue that they're working on, the idea of stopping or fixing aging, as it were. And Google, you know, they're willing to throw money at cool things through the Google Ventures venture and through other ventures as well. And it's exciting to see what they might get out of this. I don't think we'll probably hear anything out of this company, though, for at least 5 years.
They just want us to live longer so they can get more of our money.
Yeah.
To live longer, too. It's fine.
Well, something that actually has happened, this is not a potential, it's a real deal, is Google buying Bump, the Bump app. Bump has been around a long time. In fact, it was one of the very first, at the first iPhone launch, it was one of the handful of apps that were available. And the idea is that you bump phones or devices together, obviously, that are running the app. It would work between a phone and an iPad, for example, mm-hmm. to bump information. It was a great idea when it first started because we were all like, that's so cool. It's like magic. Now it's kind of like, why do you want to touch somebody else's phone? Can't you just wirelessly transfer it without bumping it? However, it is a very cool technology. I mean, there's bump contacts. There's you can bump photos, images, variety of files back and forth.
If you think about the Google Wallet announcement this week about making it easier to exchange money from one person to another, you can imagine the other sorts of things you might be able to be exchanging via Bump in the near future.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not so much that it... Audience got a laugh. It went right over my head.
The audience is a weird mind.
Thank you to the one person who got the joke. I didn't get it myself.
It's not so much that you actually have to collide with another device. It's Bump being able to tell that two phones are in general vicinity and then be able to kind of use the gyroscope effect of both phones in order to say, oh, this phone is trying to send information to that phone, and the app is smart enough to know that you're together.
So can people pick my pocket by bumping my phone now?
I don't doubt they'll do something cool with it, but right now, let's ask the chat. Chat, how many of you guys use Bump? Anyone use Bump in the chat? Get ready for the flood in 3, 2,
chat room, 1. Speak. No. There's one no, two no's, three. Oh, here we go. Nope, there's a lot of. Well, Brian, that was a leading question.
Yeah. It was a loaded question. That's right.
Somebody said Samsung. That's close enough.
Leading the witness. All right. You know, it's true, though. Every time the Bump app comes out with some new cool feature, we talk about it on our iPad today, and we both go, this is so cool, and we never use it. So I'm not exactly sure what Google gets out of this, but yeah, there's probably some NFC tie-in. Yeah, I made the prediction last week that it would be kind of, there's some sort of like a future of real-time instant messaging that I can sort of see. Haven't really thought that one through too well yet, but yes, apparently it's how much did Google pay for it? We don't know exactly. Sure, sources say this was not necessarily like a huge, huge exit for the folks at Bump, but not just an aqua hire as well. So According to people who are familiar with these matters, it's not so much that Google said, oh, well, this app is crap, but there are a lot of smart people. Let's just hire them. Didn't specify an exact sale price, but somewhere to the tune of $35 million. So wow. In all these billion-dollar acquisitions these days, I guess $35 million doesn't seem like a whole lot anymore. But again, Bump has been around for a while.
Let's start using it.
Yeah.
I see you and me make a point of using it. We'll be Bump buddies.
That's how our lives are going to be extended.
There you go.
Somehow.
Calico Bump.
Please never call me your Bump buddy again.
I really love that.
Didn't sit right.
I figured you'd come back to that one.
Should we talk about, Brian, I'm going to have to lean on you for this because I am just not world's biggest gamer, and I don't know how fired up I can get about Valve CEO Gabe Newell saying that Linux is the future of gaming, but can you start us off here?
Well, here's why is first of all, full disclosure, I'm a pretty hardcore PC gamer, and if I play an immersive game, it's almost never on a console. It's almost always on the PC. Steam is the world's largest gaming platform. If you total up all the Steam users there are, it's bigger than Xbox, bigger than PS3, bigger than any of them. But it's quiet and it doesn't get a lot of press. They've talked for a while about creating a Steam box of sorts that's not going to be an actual console, but it's going to be a platform. They said they will come out with their own, but it's going to be a platform that anyone can make this Linux box that will be a unified experience. Last year or the year before, they rolled out what they called their big picture mode, which is basically the same way to access the games that you already have, except for in a console-friendly environment, so you can use a gamepad to get around. Specifically, at this Linux event, he made a big deal about talking about how Linux was the future of gaming for all the reasons that Linux has always been a popular alternative OS. And so people are wondering if this next week we're going to see the announcement of the Steam Box, which would be huge, especially because if Valve's in an announcing mood, I mean, I don't know, Half-Life 3 might be fun to hear about if that came along too, but that's
episode
not
three,
speculated
it's gonna
at all.
It's going to happen someday.
Yeah, sooner or later. There actually was a leak of some internal memos that had like groups, like mail listservs, and Half-Life 3 and Left 4 Dead 3 were two of the listserv groups internally, allegedly, according to this. But I mean, what do you think, Tim? Have you heard anything? Did I cover most of it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been curiosity about the health of the Windows platform going forward, and so maybe this is Gabe thinking that by moving to Linux, they can control the platform a lot more solidly. It'd be very, very interesting to see this box we've been waiting for so long to come out. It'd be really great if they could say something about Episode 3, which we've been also waiting for so long to hear something about. But yeah, absolutely, that covers up great. I think that is a fantastic platform for gaming. And if Valve gets behind that platform in a big way, then that could be something that developers could start to target a bit more than we've seen in the past. It's not that often that a big AAA franchise comes out on Linux as well as Mac and Windows. So if that could be a platform that gets more support and that could help the Steam Box take off in a big, big way.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to get the exact number. He said, I want to say it was either almost 200 or almost 300 Linux titles currently on Steam. And obviously they're looking to standardize that. That's part of the reason that
198.
There you go. Thank you. That's part of the reason that consoles do so well is because you can get so much out of, even though your Xbox 360, your PS3 is almost a decade old, the hardware in there, the fact that it's standardized makes for a very smooth experience. And when people program for it, they're able to make exactly one quality, one game experience across all platforms. And if that is one of the things that has kept PC gaming as kind of a high-end boutique experience because, you can always keep upping your resolution. You could customize it, and then you have problems because they planned on you playing it one way and not on the other way. If they can crack this code and get the PC gaming experience in the living room, it would be pretty huge.
Well, Brian, you mentioned you're a pretty hardcore PC gamer. This is obviously something that you've been used to for a long time. When you hear something like this and it points to inevitable change, do you think, well, yeah, there are a lot of limitations to the PC gaming experience and I welcome this, our new Linux overlords? Or are you kind of like, nah, I like things the way that they are, and why does this whole thing have to decline and change?
I like very much things the way they are, but I know that I am not the target demographic. And I know that, there's situations that they could get around. You know, again, PC gaming is also plagued with piracy, and it's also plagued with the fact that it's hard to have a social experience with the family doing playing any of those higher-end games. To be honest, as much as I want success for Valve, and as good as I think they are, and as much as they deserve it, I think this is an extraordinarily difficult nut to crack. So I'm going to withhold judgment, but I'm not very optimistic. It just seems like a tough, tough situation for PC gaming to make that leap.
Well, you know, it wasn't tough. Grand Theft Auto selling.
Oh my God, yes.
That thing earned $1 billion in 3 days.
I'm sorry, it sounded like you said billion with a B, and that can't be true.
Oh, it is, Brian.
It's with a B.
Billion, like Brushwood.
Like Brian Brushwood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one big B right there. It took
that's
24 hours.
Are for back there.
Took 24 hours for Grand Theft Auto 5 to earn $800 million. We all went, whoa. And then just another day or so, and you get to a billion, which is...
Right, the last Call of Duty, it took something like, what, 2 weeks or so?
It was 15 days, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, which was, and at the time, we went, well, that's just the craziest thing we've ever
crazy.
Heard.
Who are these
what
people?
What does this say about us?
Have you guys played, actually, I mean, have you played Grand Theft Auto 5 yet?
No.
No, and I'm not so going good. To, but have you?
Yeah, I've only played like the first 4
it's
hours
supposed
or
to be
so.
Good.
I played with the guys over at Rage Select. They do live Let's Plays, where it's like, you know, it's half the comedy show while they're playing, half the game playing experience. It's exquisite, man. They solved so many of the problems with traditional sandbox games. You heard me give that whole speech about being a hardcore PC gamer. I am not going to wait the year until it comes to the PC. I'm going to have to end up going out to my living room and telling my kids to stay out. Daddy's running over prostitutes.
Well, you know, it's again. It's you know, back when these whenever a new Grand Theft Auto would come out, there was all this outrage, like, oh, you know, running over prostitutes. Yeah. You're not really seeing that this time at all. You know, I mean, I haven't read a lot of that stuff. Like, oh, this is the worst thing that's happened.
I feel like by version 5, we're all just used to it.
I think we're all used to it.
That's what you do.
You know, I mean, look at like
all those pundits are out driving over prostitutes themselves. At this point, they're all addicted.
But you know, a show like Breaking Bad. I mean, that's it's just the level of. I think we're kind of desensitized. Is what I'm getting to.
Mm-hmm. I hope it is. I would hope, Martin, that it's more an indication. Anytime there's a new platform, we get all scared about it. You know, when in the 1930s, it was pulp fiction books with their torrid tales of zombies. And then in the 40s, it's comic books. Oh, they're torrid tales of zombies. And then, then Dungeons & Dragons. Ah, with their torrid tales of zombies. And then now, at some point, we become comfortable with the medium. We realize that it's a storytelling medium, just like everything else. Mm-hmm. And so, because the same people who are horrified about the violence in Grand Theft Auto, of course, you know, don't mind that the whole city gets trashed in, you know, Transformers 3 or whatever. So I'm hoping that it's a case that we're all just getting mature.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what this is all about.
We're all mature.
Yeah, we're just looking for a new game. Just a bunch of adults. Nothing to see here.
Very mature.
Grand Theft Auto 5. Yeah, no, I don't actually know anybody who's...
I don't know anyone.
Who's, well, no, that's not true.
How about the chat room?
My online friends, everybody's playing Grand Theft Auto 5, but I don't know whose house I could go over to right now and
probably anyone in the chat room.
Well, I don't know where any of them live. And please don't put your address in chat. Well, that's probably true. Yeah. I have no expectation of privacy at this point. What was that, Tim?
It's believed the game cost something over between $130 and $150 million to develop, which would make it one of the most expensive video games of all time. It took about 5 years to develop this. And, of course, you know, the $1 billion in sales is actual retail, and they probably see about, 30% of that or 20% of that actually going back to the studio, something like that. But even so, I mean, they cleared their profit within 2 days, probably. And from here on out, it's all profit for Rockstar. So huge, huge success.
When did the last version come out? How many years ago?
I think it's about 5 years ago.
Yeah, so. It's been a long-awaited update to the franchise. Mm-hmm. Well, best of luck to everybody who needs to run over prostitutes.
Enjoy that.
Hope you all win.
You can run over regular people, too. They're not all prostitutes.
Okay, well, that's good. That's more real life. Not everybody's a prostitute. Hey, on that note, we should take a break. And thank Squarespace, that has nothing to do with anything, for sponsoring this episode of This Week in Tech.
Great segue.
Thank you. I'm pretty good at it. You know how much we like Squarespace, right? This is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create a professional website or online portfolio. We've loved Squarespace for years. In fact, sometimes I just go to Squarespace and I think, all right, well, my blog's getting a little long in the tooth and I need a new template, and I use Squarespace as my back end, and the templates that they have, just even if I customized nothing from the templates that they start you off with, they're beautiful. And there's so many different kinds of templates based on, is, you know, am I going to put together an online portfolio maybe for, you know, my photography business? Well, probably not, because I'm really bad at that. Or maybe I want to start some sort of a, I don't know, a cooking blog, or maybe it's just long stories, or don't laugh. I can cook. Yeah, well, you don't. All right, fine. What's interesting, though, is that there are just so many different kinds of sites that you can put together. In fact, we know that many of you have followed our advice and made your own Squarespace blogs, and we actually want to start doing something new. We want to showcase some of your blogs rather than just telling you, because some of you guys are like, I know, Squarespace is awesome, and you should see my site that I made with Squarespace. If you send a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website to the hashtag #TwitSquarespace, so hashtag #TwitSquarespace, we'll take a look at it, and we may choose your Squarespace site to mention in a future episode. It's kind of, you know, kind of a collaborative effort. Let's see what you guys are creating. So we win, and you win as well. Why you'll love Squarespace if you don't already have a Squarespace site is they're constantly improving their platform. New features, new designs, better support all the time. As I mentioned, the designs really are beautiful. They've won awards, Webbies from Forbes Awards. I mean, this is beautiful stuff, and it's easy to use. I've been using Squarespace for years. Every time I run into an issue, they've got 24/7 customer service support. People are ready and willing. I found them all very pleasant, easy to understand. They walk me through some issues. You've got real-time stats of everybody who's visiting your site and where they're coming from. And what's also nice these days is everything is mobile optimized with Squarespace. In the past, I used to have this blog that looked really, really nice if you open it up on your computer. But if you looked at it on, you know, your Android smartphone or something, it was just going to look like a mess. And Squarespace, anytime you upload any image, it creates a bunch of different versions of that image and says, well, we want to make sure that this is going to render well no matter how somebody is accessing your site. So it's mobile ready, code is beautiful, search engine optimized, and hosting is included. Squarespace takes control of the hosting, so you don't have to worry about, oh, well, I make my design at Squarespace, but then I have to work with a bunch of other companies, you know, for my hosting and my support. And, oh, if my blog goes down, then I have my hands are tied. You're going to be fine with Squarespace. They want to be an all-in-one solution. So if you'd like to try it out, why not just give it a trial run? You don't need a credit card. You can just start building your website, no strings attached. If you decide to sign up for a plan on Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TWIT9. TWIT, the number 9. 9 refers to September. It's just the way that they track us. TWIT9 to get 20% off and to show your support for This Week in Tech. We thank Squarespace for their support of This Week in Tech. Again, try your new Squarespace site. When you sign up, use that offer code TWIT9 and you get 20% off. Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. You know, I was kind of trying to avoid some, just any way you slice it, this is just pretty bad news for the folks up at BlackBerry. But we got to talk about it because BlackBerry is laying off 4,500 jobs, give or take a few. Sad. It is sad. And, you know, everybody I talk to, whether or not you felt like the executives at BlackBerry over the last year, two, 3 years were moving in the right direction, it's like nobody wanted this to happen. It's like we were all pulling for the team at BlackBerry. There's a lot of legacy love, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people. My brother still uses a BlackBerry.
Sure.
President Obama, huge BlackBerry fan. I mean, there are those people out there who absolutely love this thing. And, you know, anytime people lose jobs, of course, that's a tragic thing. And we hate to see it happen. And we always kind of root for the underdog, too.
Yeah. Tim, I mean, do you think that there was really anything that the team at BlackBerry could have done differently? I mean, did they just, the whole thing with, I remember when the iPhone was introduced and then you started seeing a lot of phones that were just the next generation of smartphone. At the beginning, there were definitely a lot of people who were like, yeah, that phone is cool, but I need to have my physical keyboard. And there's just a lot of stuff about the security of BlackBerry, or I use it with my my corporate mail, you know, more of enterprise customers. People were happy with BlackBerry for a while, but it's the next generation of smartphones has just eaten into BlackBerry's market share so much.
Yeah, you have to go back a long time to find where the mistakes were made, and they were made years ago, and they weren't really obvious mistakes at the time. Like you said, you know, they're very heavily reliant on that keyboard user base, thinking that people need a keyboard on their phone. And by the time they started to introduce touchscreen dependent devices, they were pretty crummy to begin with. You know, it takes a while to figure out how to do a touchscreen device really well, and we're at the point now where BlackBerry is doing that, but it took them basically years to kind of perfect that. And you know, while they were trying to figure that out, releasing kind of crummy storm devices and things like that, Apple was releasing new iPhones, and Samsung was releasing new Galaxy devices, and BlackBerry is just falling further and further behind. And then, of course, with all the delays getting BlackBerry 10 to the market, and the cool reception for the BlackBerry Playbook, which itself was, you know, a device that had a lot of opportunity and could have been this amazing, ideal productivity-focused tablet, because at the time, the iPad was something that a lot of enterprises were trying to use but were really struggling. If BlackBerry had come out and really positioned that to be the ultimate productivity-focused tablet, I think it could have been a success, but they tried to turn it into this kind of lifestyle gaming sort of tablet thing, and it just wasn't really marketed clearly and didn't really find any traction at all. So there were quite a few missteps along the way, and ultimately it's going to be tough to see exactly how BlackBerry recovers and continues on in a healthy way.
BlackBerry, the company said it expects to lose $950 million, as much as $995 million in the fiscal second quarter. That's a lot. And announced a change in strategy and struggles ahead selling, their BlackBerry smartphones, which it was sort of the great hope, really, at one point was, well, BlackBerry's struggling, but I don't know, maybe these new smartphones are just going to turn the whole thing around. And it sort of played out, I think, the way many people thought that it would, the majority of people. Brian, do you see BlackBerry going private? Is it just a fire sale at this point?
I believe they're going to pull a Sega. You know, in the 90s, Sega came out with a new console every year, and then they finally did it right with the Dreamcast, which was a revolutionary console. But by then, they didn't have the money, so they stopped doing hardware altogether, and they just became a software brand. BlackBerry's core value is that it represents security and stability for the enterprise market. And if they can offer to do that in software form with a suite of apps that are for Android and iOS, I could see them going completely virtual and maintaining their brand value that way. But that's my guess, if I was going to look at my crystal ball.
I think it'd be interesting if they actually turned and went the other way and stopped making their own software and purely became a hardware company. You know, if they became the ultimate productivity Android device with a QWERTY keyboard and with some security measures added on top of Android, I think that could be a very attractive proposition. We talked about, you know, who might want to buy BlackBerry, and I think it would be a smart acquisition for Lenovo, because Lenovo is trying to make strides in the smartphone business. And this would give them carrier partnerships and lots of other, you know, good stuff that they're going to take years to build on their own. But BlackBerry has already made, or it's always made, great hardware, and it'd be kind of a shame for them to step away from that. But then again, Sega always made great hardware too, and I was very sad when that news came down that they were going to stop making consoles.
I guess the rumor now is that the one of the founders might swoop in and buy the thing.
Yeah, Mike Lazaridis said that he wants to take the company private, basically. And, you know, if he sold any of his shares when he left the company, more or less, you know, then presumably he has enough money to buy back the company, because the valuation would be so much lower than it was before. You know, it'd be interesting to think what he would do with the company at that point. Right now, I'd say probably the healthiest part of the company is QNX, which was kind of an oddball purchase and kind of a curiosity. But now, you know, it's the foundation for probably the majority of infotainment systems in cars these days, and it's a hugely successful part of the business, the biggest growing part of the business right now anyway. So that right there could be the fundamental of a very successful business going forward, but it would mean shedding off a lot of weight, which includes, you know, all these employees who are unfortunately going to get laid off, and probably a big chunk of the hardware business, if not the entire hardware business.
Tim, have you had a chance to check out the Z30, the first BlackBerry phablet, meaning large phone that looks like a tablet?
Yeah, I've read the specs, and it's an interesting proposition for sure. But, you know, it's just unfortunately not a platform that really ever got any momentum, BlackBerry 10, that is. So I don't think people have been really experiencing BlackBerry 10 either on the Z10 or the Q10 and thinking, boy, I'd really love this phone if only it were a little bit bigger. Usually there are a lot of other complaints that come first. And so, you know, it might be a reasonable success, but I don't think that it'll really change things, unfortunately, for BlackBerry.
Yeah, it sounds like sales of BlackBerry 10 devices, just not huge. Company shipped about 2.7 million BlackBerry 10 handsets in Q1. So adding a phablet, which admittedly, some people love that form factor. It's too in between for me. Maybe if I had one, I'd get used to it. But a lot of people do love that phablet. They want a nice big screen, but it's sort of still easy to hold in one hand. Brian, too little, too late?
Yeah, again, I think it's more, at some point you got these projects that, you know, we're already in process. I say pull a Sega. That's my advice.
Well, what about being able to watch YouTube videos when you're not online? Let's say you're in the subway and you don't have any internet service. What? Or for whatever reason, I don't know, you just don't want to use data.
What are you getting at?
I'm getting at the fact that the company is going to turn on this feature for us. You will be able to watch, you know, you basically set up like a queue. You can watch YouTube videos offline. Pretty fun,
huh? Do you realize
what
this means?
You can't do that already?
No, you cannot do that already.
Yeah, every time you start a new video, you have to download it and restream it over and over and over again. But it sounds almost like they're describing some kind of like I don't know, syndication system that would allow you to take television-like content and cast it out to everyone's iPods that they could catch them and hold on to them. I don't know. It just seems like there's something to that.
So that's amazing, Brian. I want to get in on that. Who do I write my check to?
I don't know. Would you do this? Would you download the stuff that we typically usually watch?
Right.
Of course, there is some very long format stuff on YouTube.
Right.
But yeah, a bunch of cat videos or whatever. You're going to download a whole bunch of these, Sarah. And
the answer is yes.
You know, get on a flight to New York and watch cat videos the whole time.
Yes.
I'm asking the wrong person.
Yeah. How else am I going to get through 6 hours? Come on.
For this, I subscribe to the Spotify service for my music, and I listen to Spotify offline probably 80 or 90% of the time because I'm on flights a bunch, so I'll just download an entire artist discography and listen to it on the flight. So if I could subscribe to a YouTube channel like the Drive channel, which is one of my favorites, if I could download all their stuff and have that offline and watch it on the flight, that'd be pretty ideal to me. So I'm actually pretty excited to see how this comes together. But I hope that they do give the option of downloading everything from a given channel. If I have to go in and manually flag everything that I need to download, that'll be a little bit more annoying.
Yeah, it's kind of cumbersome. Well, it'd be nice for some of this to happen behind the scenes. But yeah, I mean, it's easy to sort of say, oh yeah, YouTube, it's little people falling off skateboards and cute cats and that sort of thing. But it's like, I mean, YouTube is everything. And obviously, the YouTube Partners project that Chad flashed up on the screen, it's like there is more and more just really great content that happens to be on the YouTube platform instead of a Netflix or an NBC. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, essentially, I mean, this is awesome for me because I use like iCatcher right now for all my podcasts for audio, but I don't really have a solution that I like for video. And I'm not going to go out and find an RSS feed for something like Epic Rap Battles of History or whatever. But if you could add that functionality to your YouTube app, and then all of a sudden you're just sort of scrolling through what you got while you're offline looking for time to kill, because those are the times you want distracting videos the most, are when you're cut off from the outside world and don't have signal. And so the fact that it would already have them preloaded in a syndication kind of way, a subscription-based service, I think would be phenomenal. I think it's a big win for content creators. It takes the YouTube ecosystem and brings them many of the benefits that we've enjoyed in podcasting for years.
It's funny, all the YouTube people getting hurt videos, yeah, they're kind of funny. all the cat videos are really funny, but you know, the cats getting hurt videos are not funny at all.
Right. It just takes it too far.
It does. Yeah. It just doesn't work. The formula kind of falls apart.
It's when the tools, we just have too many of them, right? I think that just in the sense that, as you mentioned, Brian, there's these limitations and there's a video rebuffering or it starts over. And, you know, if you're cutting it out of signal, if you never have to have the conversation with yourself of, oh, wait, am I in a position where I can't watch a YouTube video right now? Then that just is a win for the platform because we end up consuming more videos and hanging out on YouTube longer.
It seems like a good idea all around to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what else? I think it's a great idea. It's a genius. Let's talk about Netflix for a second. Netflix says, we figure out what shows we'll bring to Netflix based on what is popular on those pirated movie sites. We want to know, what do the people want? Brian, you and Tom talk about this stuff all the time on Frame Rate. I mean, is this a sort of thing? Reed Hastings and team, they're always coming up with these genius ideas to make Netflix better, and this seems so smart.
Kind of. Well, here's why it's double smart, is because number one, if it's popular on torrent sites, then that means, of course, it's very likely popular not only in, you know, to the world, but in that region. That was specifically how they chose. I forget which series it was in Finland or whatever, that they noticed that maybe it was Sons of Anarchy or something. But the other thing that's significant is
Prison Break.
When you see Prison Break, that was the one. Sorry. When you see something explode on torrents, it's often because there's an artificial black market for it, because the market isn't being served. For example, HBO has the very frustrating practice of the only way you can get HBO Go is to pay, you know, your bazillion dollars to have HBO and cable. You have to have cable, you have to have HBO and all that stuff, and you can't buy them on iTunes the next day the way you can with something like Breaking Bad. So as a result, you know, it's huge on torrent sites to have Game of Thrones come out. Likewise, if it means oftentimes there are titles that are in limbo, that they haven't found a home on Hulu Plus, or they're not carried on Amazon Instant Prime. And so, again, those are also very popular in torrent sites as well. And so then it's a great flag to get Netflix interested in working out to be the first to get the deal worked out with them.
Well, exactly. It's all of a sudden there's this whole, well, this is a big show. This is a big deal. Prison Break. Got it. Got to know about this. People in the Netherlands are crazy for Prison Break, but not everybody necessarily is even comfortable with some sort of a torrent site. You know, either you'd feel like you got to do the right thing and it would be nice to legitimately pay for this. All of a sudden Netflix says, we know what you want. Here you go. I mean, this is a legitimate way to watch content, but we know where the people want to be. We know where the trends are. We're following the trends.
I'm surprised it's not something they've been doing for a long time. I don't understand why it's such a huge revelation that you're going to go where the viewers are. You know, if everyone's over here watching these things, well, maybe you want to get those things for your network if that's your business.
I actually think research. You're right. I think they've been doing it for a while. I think the news is that they just said so.
I'd like to combine this story with the last story and get offline Netflix. I mean, we about 2 years ago at Engadget, we got it was a Lenovo tablet that had an early version of a Netflix app on it, and that app supported offline playback, which we weren't supposed to notice, but we did. So we got very excited because, you know, here's an app that supports offline playback for Netflix. It was a beta, though, and ultimately it never happened. It never came to fruition. This was 2 years ago. But I would love to see offline Netflix. I can't believe that they haven't found out a way to negotiate that with their content providers, because that would be a huge boon for them.
All right, Netflix, you're doing everything right once again. This is this next story about a California school district which has hired an outside firm to basically spy on kids, monitor the kids,
spying on the kids
on their social network activities. In fact, this is a district in Glendale, California. This is a suburb of Los Angeles. It's a big school district. Mm-hmm. Paying a firm about $40,000 to report on about 14,000 middle school and high school students for 1 year. Now, that's not so much money. I don't think the money is so much the story here. It's, well, there's two ways to look at it. Is something that a kid is saying on a social network at all pertaining to the way that the kid is interacting in class or doing well or interacting with her teacher, that sort of thing. But you hear all these stories about there's online bullying. That's
right.
Something that could happen in a hallway or it could happen online, and there are repercussions of that.
It's bad, but even worse, somebody thinking of hurting themselves.
That too.
God forbid. I mean, and if you can catch us, which they have done. They have caught this stuff before it's actually happened and gotten the kid into the proper therapy and gotten him back onto a happy course. I mean, is that a bad thing? I mean, does the end just
you'd think
by
for
the means,
as a school counselor,
you know?
This would be an absolute dream, because you would be able to intercept stuff that, I mean, you make it your absolute number one priority to keep kids happy and safe and thriving at the same time. Huge privacy concerns. Brian, you've got several kids. What's your initial reaction on the idea that their school district might be doing the same?
Well, so what they're doing essentially as an analog, I mean, I guess you could call it spying, or you could say just watching what the students do. Like, for example, if the students are physically in front of you and you could see them fighting or bragging about drug abuse or something like that, then, you know, obviously none of us would hesitate for the counselor to say or do something. What's tricky about this one is if it were a private school, for example, a friend of mine went to the Marine Military Academy in Harlingen, Texas, and because it was a private school, they were able to say they had a code of ethics, and they were able to say, if you know of anyone cheating, you are obligated to report it, and you know, to and if you don't, if you know that somebody cheats and you don't say so, then you know, you could be kicked out of the school or whatever. And that's all fine because it's a private institution. They can say things like, you will never be caught wearing a red shirt on a Tuesday at, you know, such and such place, and then they can find out that you wore a red shirt and kick you out for it. What's tricky about it is that this is a public school and it's a public funds. And now we have the awkward position of the government funding people to monitor behavior of free individuals outside of school and to give real academic repercussions as a result of it. And that's the part that makes me uncomfortable and feels icky to me.
But, you know, if they can find that kid who, God forbid, is talking about, you know, I got all these guns and I, you know, something like that could be caught.
Right.
You know, the worst possible thing that could happen could be caught.
At the same time, I just feel, and I don't want to be pessimistic because I agree with you, there's going to be some situation where the school and the sperm can point to and say it was all worth it for this one instance alone. But then you've got, I mean, kids are just, it's like they're one step ahead of the adults anyway. You know, if you're monitoring kids on the social networks, they're going to figure out a way to talk in code, you know, or lock down their profiles. Or, you know, some of this seems a little bit like, yeah, this is again, yeah, school trying to sort of make sense of what kids are doing. And then, you know, then you kind of get into these gray areas. If a teacher knows that a student has been saying terrible things about them on Facebook, is that going to affect the way that they perform in school? And that's, you know, obviously not what this tool is intended for, but it's kind of hard to know how much that might play into it.
Well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
The monitoring, I believe, is geofenced to a specific area, but it's also directly connected to, as they put the Twitter fire hose. So it's like it's a massive amount of content that they're plowing through.
All right, before we get to a few more stories, we got Pinterest starting to roll out ads. Cyanogen now being its own company, wants to compete with Android itself. Let's take a moment to thank Carbonite, our last but not least sponsor. Every time I talk about the ads, you see Ozzy the dog goes a little nuts in the background. He knows where we get our money from. Ozzy's got to eat. All right, so when's the last time that you backed up your files on your computer, Martin Sargent? I know it was like years ago. You're bad at this.
You're asking for it. I mean, back when I was on like a 486.
So, you know, a couple years ago. You're not alone, though. You're not alone. Most people just don't back up their files on any sort of a regular basis, either ever or as often as they should. Hey, what if you're running a small business? I mean, you are playing with fire if you're not backing up your files to the cloud on the regular. Automatically and continually, that's how Carbonite works. Whenever your computer is connected to the internet, Carbonite is working. You don't have to think about it. So this is not something that you don't have to say, well, okay, I've got Carbonite. No, okay, I'll make some time for myself on Friday at 4 between meetings. This is all running in the background. It's great. Unlimited backup space. Unlimited. So not, it's you'll never run out. Unlimited backup space for your PC or your Mac. It's $59.99 per year. And if you run a small business, and many people who watch and listen to Twitch shows do, Carbonite has plans that will back up all of your computers. So it's, you know, it might just be one computer, might be a group of computer or servers, external hard drives for a low, flat annual fee. So that can be a great solution for your business as well. With Carbonite, your files are continually backed up. They're stored safely off-site. If you have some sort of a computer disaster, you just restore your computer and it's like, oh, good. All right. It's like it never happened. It's, you get that peace of mind. Plus, you can access your backup files on any computer or on your smartphone or a tablet with a free Carbonite app. We've taken that for our world before, and that's really nice as well. So it's not just backup. It's access as well. You can even email a file right from the Carbonite app too. So unlimited backup for your PC or your Mac is $59.99 per year, and you can start a free trial. Just check it out today. at carbonite.com. You still don't need a credit card. None of these sponsors of ours will make you do that off the bat. They want you to check it out. Check out Carbonite. See if it works for you. We think you'll love it because, again, backing up files is an absolute must. But we know that you don't want to take too much time out of your day. So this is why Carbonite is such a great solution. Remember, use the offer code TWIT when you do purchase, and you'll get 2 bonus months free. So try out Carbonite for free. No credit card when you decide to purchase a limited backup. Again, $59.99 per year. Use that offer code TWIT when you go ahead and buy. So you get 2 bonus months for free. That's carbonite.com. And the offer code is TWIT. Do we want to talk about, okay, who's the biggest Pinterest user in this group?
Yeah. Wow, I've got to go and be somewhere with that.
Not what did he say?
Yeah, you got to go wash your hair or something. Yeah. Tim, Pinterest is going to start rolling out ads. We've got CEO Ben Silberman saying we're going to start experimenting with promoting certain pins. This is going to be something that's going to be completely transparent for our user base. You will know when there's an ad. Is there... Clearly, Pinterest has a huge, huge user base. Is there
a very active user base, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that's pinned and shared on Pinterest will lead you back to something that is purchasable on an originating site anyway. I mean, is this just like the best of two worlds here? I mean, as long as they do it in a way that doesn't look too terrible or disrupt the Pinterest experience?
Yeah, exactly. If they do it right, it's definitely a great solution. I mean, how many times do you see people creating collections of, you know, home decor that they want to buy or, you know, cupcakes that they want to make? And imagine if you could click on this piece of home decor and it would say, oh, you can buy this at Amazon.com for $9.95 or something like that. I don't think anybody would really feel bad about that. And ultimately, Amazon would love to be there. The manufacturer would love to be there. And of course, Pinterest would love to capture a percentage of that sale. It's something that makes a huge amount of sense for all parties involved. Again, if they do it right, if they do it in a transparent way, which they're saying that they're going to, but ultimately, you know, you can't be surprised. It's a free service. It's a very popular one. They have to make money at some point or the service is going to shut down. So hopefully they do it right. But ultimately I think they can.
You know, it's Pinterest is so great because again, I know a lot of people in chat room are sort of saying Pinterest. I mean, when do you use Pinterest? Who are all these people?
Oh, dude, I'll tell you what. Like, for craft stuff, Pinterest is huge. For example, my wife did... She made these... My daughter did her bridging ceremony for Girl Scouts. And so my wife made these... Hold on. These rainbow bridge cake pops right there, which she got the idea straight from... see, she even says, thanks, Pinterest.
Adorable. Aww. Look at those. Like a nyan cat.
I was shopping for new wheels for my car, and I use Pinterest for that. I would pin a bunch of different wheels for my car, and then I actually kind of used that to decide which wheels I wanted to get. So it's a great way to do comparison shopping, and especially if you're talking about things that are, you know, aesthetic based. It's a really great way to do that sort of thing. And again, it's a huge marketing tie-in.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, okay, so the example that you used, Tim, it's like wheels for your car. Okay, well, Pinterest is like, well, we kind of get an idea of what Tim might want to buy in the future. So when you see an ad that might be in that realm of, you know, car tech or whatever, you go, yeah, well, I'm on Pinterest anyway because I'm probably doing research on something that I'm going to end up buying. And it all makes perfect sense. When I see an ad for, you know, a pair of shoes that maybe I've looked at online in the right rail of my Facebook news feed, I get livid because I'm like, I'm not on Facebook to buy things. I don't want to see shoes to buy here on Facebook. Were it on Pinterest, I'm sure I would welcome it and say, oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't buy those shoes yet. I love these shoes. I'm pinning. It's like pinning.
I'm going to pin it.
You don't even know what pinning means.
I do. In crafting.
Yeah. With your craft projects.
I'm sure. My brain, this is the sound of my brain short-circuiting, trying to tie pin it in with bump buddies. I've got nothing, though, unfortunately.
I think it's sort of like when you have an instance where, yeah, you're doing research on wheels for your car. In my case, I wanted to buy a new couch, and I went crazy on Pinterest because I thought, well, I just wanted one place where I can remember all of these photos. And then it turned into this thing where it's like, now I'm really, really in love with some of these designers that I don't know these people. They certainly don't know me, but I love all their pins. Ooh, look at that living room. Oh, she did that really nice thing with the lamp. It's like this whole community, and it's really fun. But I had to have that first little project in order to get in.
I don't use Pinterest, but if I was single and online dating, I would.
To so meet I some can just, hot no, furniture I can just designers?
Pin all the ones that I'm interested in, you know?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it really that works as well as you might be thinking that it does.
Ooh,
stick to
like
OKCupid.
Just keep digging, Martin. You're doing great.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Hey, should we talk about Cyanogen wanting to basically, well, they say that they would like to be the third major mobile ecosystem. And if you're not totally familiar with Cyanogen, Cyanogen Mod has grown a lot as custom Android firmware, is introducing new services along the way, and it is now going to operate as a full company like any other, called Cyanogen Incorporated, led by Boost Mobile co-founder Kurt McMaster, and they're going to devote themselves to building Cyanogen Mod as a platform. We were talking about this on Tech News today, and you know, I don't have an Android, and so Jason Howell is always my go-to when I say, is this something that the Android community wants? You know, and he's explained that Cyanogen is great in many ways because it's a cleaner install. It helps the whole system, if you're on the Android system, run more smoothly, boot up stuff faster, that sort of thing. So it makes perfect sense. But then how do you get to the kind of hardware that you're going to choose when you've got something like stock Android, then you've got Cyanogen, and then you've got the manufacturer's bloatware on top of that? Tim, are they going in the right direction? Is this some sort of a solution for Android?
I'm actually really curious to see how this shakes out because I'm not sure that we need another player like this. Obviously, they've had huge success on the iOS front, but you know, it's always been kind of an alternative kind of pirate operation. So for them to be going, I don't want to say legit, but you know, to be getting a little bit more serious about this and to be challenging the likes of Google and the likes of HTC and other folks who are doing customized versions of Android, that's a pretty big ask. I'm excited to see what they come up with, though. I mean, their designs have been great, and the sort of innovations that they brought to the mobile operating system front are really encouraging to see. So for them to have full reign to do whatever they want to with an operating system is encouraging. But I'm just not sure how the market's going to react because we've seen, you know, offerings from Mozilla not exactly take a lot of wind out of Android sales by any means. And I'm afraid that they'll have some tough seas ahead to continue with the stretched nautical metaphor there.
Brian, are you an Android user? I can't remember.
Man, I don't even speak Spanish. You don't want to ask me.
What's happening to us?
I don't know. You lost me on Pinterest. I'm
You're
not going to tell
you
anything about Cyanogen Mod.
Brian, are you watching the Emmys red carpet pre-party?
No, definitely not.
No, I mean, I feel bad. Like I'm very Android curious, but I've never, you know, I've never gotten an Android. Maybe it's time for me to jump over since I'm not getting the 5S.
Yeah, maybe. We've got some people in chat saying, Sarah, there's not one single Android community. There are a lot of different kinds of Android and people who like this and that. And I think that's sort of the point, though. The point is that there are many different Android experiences. I mean, look at the Kindle Fire. I mean, there are Android experiences. Amazon is just one great example of something where it's like, well, it doesn't really look like Android at all, but that's what's under the hood. Cyanogen saying we can provide an Android experience for anybody who believes in this, yes, large and admittedly fragmented ecosystem, but we're going to do it better, and that's the best Android experience that we're going to offer. Yeah, yeah. You're nodding.
I agree.
I'm learning.
That's, yes, that's me agreeing with you. That's me. That's me knowing when I'm outside of my depth and trying to think of something funny to say.
Is there anything that you guys want to argue about before we wrap up the show? Now that we've been on air for about 2 hours, the length of a regular Twit episode. Anybody?
Man, I don't want to argue nothing.
For Microsoft tomorrow, big Surface event in the morning.
Yeah, we want to fight about that, or just maybe talk about. Yeah, so
fight it.
Tim, are you going to be, it's happening in New York, correct?
Yes, it's actually why I'm in a hotel tonight. So I'll be there for the event tomorrow morning. I'll be live blogging at CNET, so I hope you join us.
Oh, very cool.
So I'm not familiar with this either. What is going on tomorrow that Microsoft is announcing?
We don't know exactly yet, but Microsoft has invited us to their event tomorrow morning to see the next generation of Surface. I think that's about all that they said, and that's about all we can say for now.
Okay.
Is there any buzz or speculation already? Of course, by the time most people hear this, we'll already know.
Yeah, there have been quite a few leaked specs. You know, nothing confirmed, of course, but there's a lot of smoke, so presumably there's some fire too. But you know, we're predicting the you know, some sort of a Haswell update for the Pro version of the Surface. The Surface RT, it sounds like it's going to get a little bit quicker. I think the hardware is going to be more or less the same, just based on the leaks that we've seen so far. But we don't know the details yet. We don't know the pricing yet. So we'll see that. We'll see that tomorrow morning, I guess.
Well, excellent. Okay. Well, that's awesome. We will definitely be following your live blog, Tim. But now that you're over at CNET now as the feature editor, tell folks where they can follow more of the stuff that you're writing about and following week to week.
Yeah, definitely CNET's the place to go. I've got something big that's going to be hitting the site tomorrow as well, so look forward to that. And, you know, my personal blog is Digital Displacement, but I haven't had a lot of time to do any updating there. And I am Tim_Stevens on Twitter, just like Tim Cook is Tim_Cook, which I don't think is a coincidence, but, you know, I'll leave that there.
Well, it's nice that Tim Cook is looking to you to, you know, when he wants to sort of enter the Twitter fray, says, what would Tim Stevens do? Because I don't want to look stupid.
Yeah, my first tweet was not from an Apple store, though. I will put that out there.
Well, thanks, Tim Stevens, so much for joining us on this episode of Twit. Please do come back, and we have you on Tech News Today as often as we can. So
I love it. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. And Brian Brushwood, not just hey, man, how you doing? Not just of Twit shows, NSFW, and of course Framerate, but host of Scam School. All around good guy podcaster. You do some magic stuff. I mean, you're pretty busy. Pretty busy dude.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what. If I got one thing to promote, the biggest news in my lifetime, basically, is after like 3 years of working on it off and on, the Scam School physical book is out. It's a legit-ass publisher and everything. It's my first real book. I'm very excited.
Woohoo!
And you can get it at Scam. Thank you very much, man. Scamstuff.com. And it's even got QR codes to link you to the different episodes and to see live demonstrations of everything. But if you want to follow somebody who's also funnier than me, follow my wife. She's Invisible Wife on Twitter, and she's hilarious because when she has all those dark thoughts that moms can't help but have, she runs to there, and she expresses them all.
You play Grand Theft Auto 5, she takes to Twitter. It's exactly. Perfect. The perfect relationship. And Martin Sargent. Thank you so much, Brian, for being with us today. And Martin Sargent, my old buddy, my pal, former co-host of This Week in Fun, one of the Twit Network's most beloved shows. Who knows? It may rise from the ashes one day.
I heard a rumor.
We keep threatening to do it. Mm-hmm. And then everyone says, please don't. And then we don't. And then we think it's a good idea again. So
I think that we should just do it. I think that we should promise everyone out there right now that we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And then we'll do it for sure.
No, actually, we're pretty good at not keeping our promises when
it
comes to that.
But I really want to do it this time. Thank you so much for having me on.
You should do it like a pay-per-view spectacular, like the reunion special. Then there's a buck in it for you.
Yeah, if there's a monetary angle to it, I'm
then we'll do
for
it.
Sure.
That's absolutely actually the only thing that's holding us back. Let's be honest. No one's going to pay us, and so we're too busy, and we want to sleep in.
Called the Bump Buddy Special.
Yeah! Title.
Sorry,
title.
Sarah.
You can follow me at Martin the Sergeant. I've got some of these really cool Corning ads coming out this week. I hope you all watch them. If you do,
remind people what they search for online.
Just Broke Face on YouTube should get you there. I'm not sure exactly when they're going to be released. There's already one that's been floated out there, but yeah, check them out. I'd appreciate it.
Thanks
so much for watching.
Thanks so much for being here. It was super fun.
No, it was great. I love coming on here. It's great. And it's great meeting you, Tim.
And you, Martin.
That was great. I was very impressed by everything, and it was really, really cool listening to you. And Brian, always great to see you, man. Always fun.
Dude, you're the best person on earth, Martin.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I was not supposed to get laughter, unfortunately. Now I just sound like an ass.
Oh, I took it the wrong way, that's for sure.
All right, well, thanks to Tim Stevens, Brian Brushwood, and Martin Sargent for joining me. I'm Sarah Lane, filling in for Leo Laporte on episode 424 while he is off jet-setting around Europe. That jerk. Another Twit is in the can.